This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Now with part one of the Morning Farm Show on this Monday, we join WSMI Farm Director Angela Besch.
Thank you. Here are Friday's closing grain futures quotes from the Chicago Board of Trade. September corn, 365 and three quarters, up 3 3/4. December corn, 377, up 3.5. March corn, 390 and a quarter, up 3.5. September soybeans, 1102.5, up 4.25. November soybeans, 1052, down 4. January soybeans, 1061, down 3 3/4. September wheat, 551.25, up 14. December wheat, 563.5, up 10 3/4. March wheat, 583.5, up 10.5. Now time for your cash grain report from the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Thank you. This is Jerry Milberg with the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Friday's Grain Market Report. Illinois country grain prices ended mixed on Friday afternoon. Corn posted gains from today's prevented planting report. Wheat chalked up gains on the Ukraine and Russian political unrest, and soybeans closed lower on technical trading at the Board of Trade. In northern and western Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids up 3 to 4 cents at 356 to 373. Soybean bids mostly 3 to 4 lower at 1123 to 1242. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids 4 cents stronger at 353 to 374, while soybean bids were mostly 4 cents lower at 1197 to 1262. In the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were 4 cents stronger at 356 to 371. Soybean bids mostly 4 cents lower, ranging from 1162 to 1204. And the wheat bids up 14 cents at 456 to 511. Illinois soybean processor cash soybean bids ended mixed on Friday, ranging from 1277 to 1312. Basis ended steady to 12 cents stronger, ranging from 225 to 260 over November. High Pro 48% soybean meal on a truck basis offered in a range of $448.30 to $468.30. That's up $5.90 a ton, while basis ended steady range from $60 to $80 over September. Illinois corn processor cash corn bids 4 cents stronger at $383 to $396, with basis steady range from $17 to $30 over September. Illinois River Barge Loading Elevators quoted producer corn bids steady to 8 cents higher at 377 to 393. Basis ended mixed, ranging from 11 to 27 over September. Soybeans ended 4 cents lower at 1127 to 1252, with basis steady ranging from 75 to 200 over November. East St. Louis Barge Loading Terminal Elevators placed their producer corn bids mostly a nickel higher at 396 to $4 even. These same elevators dropped their soybean prices 14 cents with quotations at 1192 to 1227. Soft red winter wheat ended 14 cents higher at 503 to 517, and Milo steady to 3 cents stronger at 382 to 427. Contract bids to producers for new crop delivered grain in northern and western Illinois. Country elevator bids to producers in those regions for new crop corn range from 339 to 347. New crop soybean bids, 1002 to 1037. In central Illinois, new crop corn bids range from 336 up to 349. New crop soybean bids, 1006 to 1037. And in the southern part of the state, new crop corn bids range from 342 up to 357, with the new crop soybean bids ranging from 1013 up to 1038. That completes our country grain report for Friday. This is Jerry Milberg with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And here are Friday's closing livestock futures quotes from the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. August live cattle, 150.60, up 60 cents. October live cattle, 147.75, up 40 cents. December live cattle, 150.90, up $1.25. August feeder cattle, 217.22, up $2.10. September feeder cattle, 215.10, up $2.05. October feeder cattle, 214.30, up $1.92. October lean hogs, 94.95, down 30 cents. December lean hogs, 89.05, up $1.30. February lean hogs, 87.35, up 75 cents. Now time for your cash livestock report from the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Thank you. I'm Bob Reese with the Illinois Department of Agriculture, bringing you Friday the 15th's afternoon livestock report. Starting with the National Daily Direct Hog Report, calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass traded $1.76 lower in the range of $95 to $104 with a weighted carcass price of $103.24. From the Illinois Direct Sow Report, slaughter sows were trading steady with moderate demand for moderate offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows under 400 pounds were 75 to 81, 4 to 5 weights 82 to 85, 5 to 6 weights 83 to 86, and 6 weights and up 85 to 88. On the Illinois Direct Hog Trade, barrels and gilts at country buying points were trading $4 lower, with moderate demand for moderate offerings, ranging in price from 70 to 77. Receipts for Illinois hogs today totaled 13,188 head. And now the report from the Walnut Livestock Auction for Thursday, August 14th. They had receipts of 322 head, starting with the choice slaughter steers. They were 150 to 157.50. Select and choice steers, 143 to 149.50. And select Holstein steers, choice Holstein steers, were 138.50 to 143, select and choice 132 to 135. Choice slaughter heifers 150 to 156.75, and select and choice heifers 149. Now on to the slaughter cows. Premiums were bringing 128, breakers 112 to 117, boners 102 to 110, and leans 95 to 101. Slaughter bulls under 1,500 pounds, 123, and 1,750-pound bulls and up were bringing 116.75 to 118. Now, in the direct cattle trade from the National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, steers on a live basis traded at 153 to 155, and on a dress basis at 242 to 245. Heifers on a live basis traded at 155 to 156 and on a dress basis 241 to 245. From the National Daily Pork FOB Plant Report, training for retail and processing cuts were established with 282 loads traded. Calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass was 111.80, which was off $4.39. From the National Box Beef Cutout Report, values for choice and select beef carcasses were trading lower. Choice carcasses, $255.54, that was $1.20 lower, with select carcasses at $248.38, and that was 19 cents lower. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated at 112,000, which compared to 114,000 last week and 117,000 a year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at 395,000, which compared to 345,000 last week and 423,000 a year ago. That concludes our livestock report. This is Bob Reese with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And here are your cash grain bids from Hog Inc. August corn delivered to Greenfield, $3.76. September corn delivered to Greenfield, $3.55. August corn delivered to Scottville, $3.67. September corn delivered to Scottville, $3.55. August beans delivered to Greenfield, $11.86. September beans delivered to Greenfield, $10.35. August beans delivered to Scottville, $11.75. September beans delivered to Scottville, $10.35. August wheat delivered to Scottville, $4.81. Once again, their pre-opening prices are corn at Greenfield is $3.76, corn at Scottville is $3.67, beans at Greenfield are $11.86, beans at Scottville are $11.75, and wheat at Scottville is $4.81. That's all for part one of this morning's farm show. Stay tuned for part two coming up after this.
Part one of the Morning Farm Show brought to you this morning by Farm Credit Illinois and by Taylor Tire and Auto on Tyler Avenue, Litchfield. It's 20 minutes after 6 on this Monday morning from WSMI, WSMI FM 106, color radar, showing no precipitation in the mid-Illinois listening area at this time. This check of color radar weather brought to you by the M&M Service Company.
There's a difference between field experts and experts in the field. At M&M Service, we're experts in the field. Our crop specialists are driven to maximize every acre and bring the latest agronomic technologies and innovations to your farm. Whether recommending the appropriate hybrid or variety, nutrient management for optimum growth, or advice on disease and pest management, our crop specialists are always focused on pointing your operations forward. So the only thing you'll be asking M&M Service is what's next. M&M Service Company, bringing you what's next.
For today, partly cloudy skies, high temperatures in the mid-80s with light and variable winds. Tonight, partly cloudy, a slight chance of showers in the forecast. Low temperatures in the low 70s, and for tomorrow, Tuesday, partly cloudy, a slight chance of a shower, highs in the low 90s. Your extended forecast for Wednesday through Friday, partly cloudy with a day-to-day chance of showers. Low temperatures in the low 70s, high temperatures in the low 90s. Right now at the Weather Center, the winds are calm, the barometric pressure is steady. We have cloudy skies with scattered fog in the area right now, a temperature of 66 degrees. And over the weekend, WSMI weather watcher Kyle Schmedeke of Irving, 1 2/10 inches of rain, 3 inches recorded by Rich Henry of Staunton, and 1 6/10 inches here at the Weather Center. Once again, cloudy, foggy skies, 66 degrees on this Monday morning. Part two of the Morning Farm Show is brought to you this morning by Bishop Motors of Staunton and Litchfield. And we'll rejoin WSMI Farm Director Angela Besh next.
Hi, this is Kyle Bishop from Bishop Motors. The Motor Trend Truck of the Year, the 2014 Ram 1500, has low financing with great rebates, and we have a nice selection to choose from. We also have one remaining 13 Dodge Avenger loaded, and we're selling below invoice. And the all-new Chrysler Town & Country and Dodge Grand Caravan have 0% for 72 months and a $1,000 rebate. Right here at Bishop Motors, where your word and handshake makes the best deals.
This week, CHS Shipman is holding a special event. I spoke with Aaron Williams for more information.
Yes, on August 21st, that's a Thursday evening at 6 p.m., just east of Shipman on Route 16, we're going to hold an answer plot event, and we're going to feed everyone supper, and it's just going to be a good evening out there.
Now, what all goes into an answer plot? What's going to be going on that evening?
A lot of expert crop protection. Our agronomists are just top-notch, and they can show you firsthand the latest crop protection, and you can learn about the newest seed technology. And what's so great about Answer Plot is it's so real. What you see at an Answer Plot event is what's happening in a grower's fields.
I assume growers will be able to get all sorts of questions answered, ranging from weeds to growing conditions.
Absolutely, absolutely. We'll have a full staff, a CHS staff will be out there. Our sales guys, our agronomy guys, ag leader, Mycogen, Winfield guys, all our energy guys will be out there to answer any questions and to help you out with anything you might need.
So CHS is a really interesting company. Not only do you guys have these answer plots and get connected with the community, but I believe you are the only farmer-owned co-op who is a Fortune 100 company.
We are. And CHS is really new in this area. We're formerly Shipman Elevator. And CHS has primarily thus far been in the Dakotas and in Minnesota and up north, but they're slowly filtering down to this part of the country. So yeah, it's really good. We're the leading global agronomy business owned by farmers and ranchers and cooperatives across the U.S.
So what does that involve when it comes to being an elevator in a local area? How does that make things a little bit different? Because I know you have corporate you have to deal with, I assume, and then you're also still local locations.
Right, and we do try to stay our identity in Shipman. We are CHS Shipman, and yes, we are CHS, which is a worldwide company and a co-op, but we're true to our roots.
And CHS plans to keep expanding, I assume. I mean, if you're a Fortune 100 company, you want to maintain that spot.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, we have a Route 140 location just outside of Greenville and Pocahontas, and we actually just had our open house there last night. And yeah, just growing like a weed. It's been great.
Again, that was Aaron Williams with CHS. Their answer plot is going to be Thursday, August 21st at 6 p.m. on their Route 16 location. Last week, the University of Illinois held their annual Agronomy Day. One of the speakers was Aaron Hager, who focused on weed control and how our system of controlling weeds is probably going to have to change.
Actually, we're really trying to focus people's attention on the tools and the techniques that we have now to better rotate among various herbicide classes to either better manage existing resistant populations or perhaps even more optimistically to reduce the amount of selection that we may be doing to find additional cases of resistant weeds. So how shall they rotate is really based on the question, should we be really thinking about rotating our herbicides by their modes of action, or should we actually rotate by their sites of action? And what we're trying to do is illustrate where many instances it's going to be much more consistent for farmers to actually rotate based on the site of action of the herbicides.
And the weeds that we're combating have gotten a bit scarier. You said that there are cases of weeds that have a metabolism-based resistance.
Metabolism-based resistance is what we have always hoped that we would not have to encounter. But unfortunately now, in some of our work that we've done recently with water hemp, we're finding more and more instances where there's not only a target site-based resistance, but there's also now enhanced herbicide metabolism. And that's, in many respects, could be a game changer for us, because it really, in many cases, metabolism-based resistance may not be specific for only one class of herbicide. It may actually confer a very broad, either enhanced tolerance or, worse yet, resistance to many different classes of herbicides.
So how can farmers hope to combat weeds that are resistant to multiple different herbicides?
If we really think about just simply trying to think what can we add to the tank in addition to what we have already to try to manage these populations, unfortunately, we're not going to gain much with these resistant populations. The way I think ultimately we're going to be successful in terms of being able to farm in the face of these multiple resistant populations, whether it be water hemp or worse yet, whether it be palm or amaranth, is not just go against the plant itself, because if we do that, we're going to lose. It's happened repeatedly down through time in geographies other than Illinois. We've seen this happen repeatedly. The way that we're going to be successful is that if we target our approach to the most vulnerable stage in the life cycle of these plants, and that's not a 4 to 6 inch tall palmer. The most vulnerable stage is the seed stage. And with either water hemp or palmer, what we do know is that these seeds are not last indefinitely in the seed bank. They're not something like velvet leaf that'll hang around for 30, 40, 50 years. On average, most of the viability of these dioecious pigweeds is gone after about 10 years.
And you have this handy-dandy chart that you handed out to everyone today. Do you want to explain what this chart is laying out?
The chart is a new publication from a joint effort with the United Soybean Board, several industry partners, and many land-grant universities. And it really is a tool that we can use to better understand how herbicides are classified. It's the Take Action series. And what it illustrates is various herbicides that are categorized by either their mode of action or, again, more importantly, by their site of action. It breaks down into various families, the different target sites and the herbicides that would fall into those. And it makes it very, very simple to use, because each unique target site is colored differently. So you don't necessarily have to remember these big, long, complex names of these target sites. You can simply look at the colors and know that different colors would be herbicides that have different target sites.
All right, very good. So we have hope of combating these weeds with multiple modes of resistance besides going out and weeding them by hand.
That will be a component that we do have to consider. Obviously, the as we indicated, the way that we can really make inroads against these populations is to manage the seeds. And that also includes not allowing any seed to be added back into the seed bank, which means that if we do integrate our programs, if we have used multiple herbicides throughout the growing season, but if we still have a few remaining water hemp plants in a field or palmer plants, worse yet, in a field, take the time and effort to go remove them before those seeds are actually mature enough to be added back into the seed bank.
Any number one key pieces of advice that you would give to farmers in getting ahead of these weeds?
The key really to success is a much more integrated approach to how we manage these. We've been very effective in controlling these weeds for many, many years with some of the herbicides, but now they've changed. They've evolved these resistance mechanisms to where now what we're going to have to do to better manage these in the future will not be simple. By nature, it just simply cannot happen in a very simplified, this is all I need to do approach. It's going to have to be a very integrated approach where we think more about attacking these species at their most vulnerable life stage. If we don't see any new chemistry coming from the industry, what we have right now is what we're going to have for tools into the foreseeable future. So we may have to consider things like not only using different herbicides in different combinations, but do we have scenarios where maybe cover crops could be utilized, where we could actually reduce the seed bank by using a cover crop? We may have to modify slightly the planting regime that we have. Instead of planting all the corn acres in Illinois, you know, by the middle of April, maybe some of the worst fields, we let it go for an extra week, for example, let more of the seed germinate, work the ground ahead of planting time, then we've just reduced our seed bank by literally by millions of seeds by just allowing them to do what they're there to do, and that is germinate and emerge.
So it could potentially be now an entire system change instead of just adding more things to the tank.
That's exactly where we really think the long-term success of our weed management programs will be.
Again, that was Aaron Hager with the University of Illinois speaking on weed control. Last week, the Montgomery County Soil and Water Conservation District held a cover crops meeting. The guest speaker was Andy Shireman of Chapin, Illinois. He owns about 3,000 acres in Morgan, Scott, and Brown counties, and talked about his experience using cover crops on all of his acreage.
First off, we have all different ranges of soils, and we were seeing how well no-till and strip-till was working for us. So we could see cover crops were kind of coming on. We were reading in the papers, on the internet or whatever, and we could see a lot of the benefits. And we thought, well, if it's a benefit for 40 acres, it's got to be a benefit for 3,000. So we kind of went all in and tried to make it work. And so far, it's been working well for us.
Shireman says he's following in the footsteps of his ancestors.
3 years ago, I guess I would put it at 2011, that's whenever we went full tilt. I had been kind of messing around with some things after wheat, a lot of the clovers, and you can see how well that works. And our ancestors did that 60, 70 years ago. They always had some kind of cover crop or whatever. It just kind of faded away, and I think they had something going on there. They just didn't have the implementation to make it work the way we do now. We have the technology, we have the equipment, and we have the know-how to make it work, and it's coming back around, and it looks like it's going to work very well.
As for Shireman's cover crop of choice, he says cereal ryegrass has proven to work best for him.
On my thinking, annual ryegrass is definitely my first choice. It seems like I get the most out of what the seed does. It has a very good root system. It'll get very deep. It'll mine some nutrients from really down deep, bust up some compactions. And for me, it builds organic matter faster than any of the other ones out there. The only thing is you have to have it seeded early enough so that it'll survive the winter.
Shireman said in his cover crop experience, soil type does not seem to have much of a bearing on whether you see an improvement or not.
No, I have a broad range. I go from sands all the way to the prairie, and seems to work well on all of them. All the soils could use cover crops, and it can be implemented into a lot of different farming systems. You can even use it with a little bit of tillage. I think anything is better than nothing.
Shireman also gave an outline of how to use the ryegrasses in a rotational setting.
Normally, I recommend annual ryegrass ahead of corn. Plant your corn, and then after that, you'll want to plant some cereal rye. And then after the cereal rye in the spring, go to beans. After beans, go to wheat, and then go back to the annual ryegrass after wheat. Seems like in the summer, it's very easy to get the annual ryegrass established. You want to be August 15th or so. You get a very good growth on the annual ryegrass if you get the right precipitation. And if you get in that kind of rotation, I believe you will increase your organic matter very fast.
Shireman also cautions producers who are trying out cover crops to give it a couple years to really work.
Yes, definitely. I know that on the annual ryegrass, I was told whenever I first started using it to give it at least 3 years. I have noticed on my cereal rye ahead of beans, the first year I noticed increase, but I would give it 5 years. I know whenever no-till first came out, people were trying that, and the first year it kind of lagged behind a little bit. Well, you had to give it a few years, and I also attribute that to our knowledge was not there. I think that in the no-till system, we were not putting enough nutrients out there to compensate for what a tillage system put back in faster, where on a no-till system, it's a slow release, a breakdown of things, and it took 2 or 3 years to get in a cycle. So I feel like the cover crops are the same way. Give it 4 or 5 years. I think you'll see the benefits long before that.
As with any crops, time and temperature are key with cover crops.
That is correct, especially on seeding and on termination. On termination of a cover crop, you definitely need to make sure you follow the rules whenever it's cool. I really stress that. It can really be hard to terminate some of the annual ryegrass and sorrel rye early in the spring when it's too cool. And seedings definitely is something else on the temperature sensitive. An annual ryegrass will not do you any advantage if you plant it too late. It needs to be planted early. Sorrel rye, it can go late into the fall, early winter, and you'll be fine.
Overall, Shireman says that cover crops have been a beneficial management practice that hasn't really changed the way he operates his farm too much.
That is true. I have not changed anything. I am still one of the first people to plant. I am one of the first people to harvest. I still do strip till, no till. The only thing I guess I've changed is that I have to seed another crop in the fall. That's the only thing that I've changed. I continue to strip till the same way, same dates, planting the same stuff on the same date. Nothing has changed for me. Somebody on the fence, I know I spoke earlier of starting small. We saw where people started small, and then we decided, well, if it's good on something small, it'll be good on something big. But yeah, if you are skeptical, try some on a small area, but don't just do it 1 year. Give it 3 or 4 or 5 years. I think you'll really learn to love it, grow to love it. Also, I think that definitely throughout the future, the cover crops are going to expand.
Again, that was Andy Shireman of Chapin, Illinois, speaking at a cover crops meeting sponsored by the Montgomery County Soil and Water Conservation District. That's all for this morning's Farm Show. For WSMI, I'm Angela Besh. Thanks for tuning in.